Welcome to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio KDNK. We are in the studio today with Crimpy's very own Vanessa Harmony, an arborist and fruit tree lover, as well as an incredibly beautiful woman, and I'm sure she has lots of other skills she's going to share with us today. So lucky Jerome to be surrounded by so many beautiful, strong, smart women.
Past all and the present.
Time, yeah. All the time. Yeah. You have some good karma coming there, I think. Yeah. So Vanessa, I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about how you ended up in our valley and at the Permaculture Institute.
Well, a very formative experience for me was going to wildlife camp. It was a National Wildlife Federation wildlife camp in the summertime in the Colorado Rockies. And we would spend about 10 days camping and backpacking. And that's when I formed my love for the Colorado Rockies and a strong nature-based ethic and decided I always wanted to end up in Colorado. So I went to college in Boulder and got my environmental studies degree, but I was undecided about my career options after college. And so I had an unexpected 7-year career in the pharmaceutical clinical trials industry. Mm. But during that time, I discovered permaculture and took a permaculture design course on the side. And discovered forest gardening, and it was at a talk by Eric Tonesmeyer where his enthusiasm for edible perennial plants really rubbed off on me and made me realize that I wanted to make my career out of edible perennial plants. And I was ready to move back to Colorado, so I researched Crimpy, and I saw that he had done an interview with Marjorie Wildcraft talking about the livelihood opportunities at Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. And there was an opportunity for somebody to come and take over the nursery operation, which really resonated with me. And so I came and spent 10 days camping and taking a course and doing some volunteer work at Crimpy and knew I wanted to come back to stay in the Roaring Fork Valley. So as of February of 2016, here I am.
Fabulous. Well, Jerome, how has it been having Vanessa up there working with the trees? I've seen a beautiful kind of growth of the nursery since she's been
yes,
there.
And you know, I struggled to keep it going for many years. It was a hobby more than a business, and it's good to see it really actually evolving into a full-fledged business or a full-fledged livelihood now with her expertise. And you know, all the time she spent in that cubicle wasn't wasted because she has good management skills and mm-hmm. she has you know, good marketing skills and good people skills, so that all goes to make that livelihood what it took, what I couldn't bring to it. I mean, I had the greenhouses, I had the plant material, but I really always struggling to come up with the right potting mixes and a lot of challenges. I mean, we worked together on it for a whole year, a year and a half, and I spent a lot of time, you know, making sure that she was supported this spring as well when we were potting up, make sure she had, you know, the right materials and the right volunteers and stuff. So, but it's been really, for me, to see like a little baby that we nourished. And we have a couple more livelihoods that we want to bring up out of the doldrums.
So you're mentioning this word livelihood. I'd love for, in case our listeners haven't heard you say that term before or don't know what you mean by that, what do you, in the context of Crimpy, mean by the word livelihood, or what is this program that you're embarking upon?
Well, it's part of like this new perennial economy that we're talking about, is that, you know, a farm is an ecosystem, and we only have an acre of viable farming soil up there. The rest of it is experimental and pinyon and juniper, but we intensively farm 1 acre with perennial plants and with greenhouses as well. And out of that comes a nursery. The nursery is supported by the forest garden. It's supported by the greenhouses. And so you can actually make a living out of that. But it's not like you have to buy all the infrastructure and plant all the plants. They were there planted 20 years ago. So you don't have to
start from scratch.
No, you don't have to start from scratch. And then one thing feeds back into the other. That's what the perennial economy is. So if somebody wants to buy a tree, a particular plum tree, you can take them down to that mature plum tree. You can eat the fruit, or you can have some fruit at the farmer's market in a bowl. They can eat that fruit, and then they can buy that tree. Mm. So there's a connection there, and that's what permaculture makes, those connections, permaculture design. And then that's what I see now flowering with the, and the first garden continues to flower and provide, you know, propagation material, demonstration, education. So another livelihood is our education facility, our education programs, and
sure,
that's you know, really fleshed out every year, and that's another way we make some income coming in. And it's not like we're making a killing. We're making a livelihood. We're making enough money. We have our living expenses minimal. And that's part of the whole thing, is to integrate and cut down on your inputs and your outputs. Your inputs become larger that way.
Excellent. But
what could you want to add something to that?
So, yeah, Vanessa, if you have an elevator speech, a couple to succinct what this livelihood program is, what it means to you, but also kind of generally what it is.
Okay, in a nutshell, it's a way for the people that are living and working at Crimpy to make a living based on the land and resources, indoor and outdoor forest gardens, as Jerome mentioned. But then what Crimpy gets out of it is the shared workforce of the people who are there to tend and manage the land, as well as the nonprofit and the farmstead. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship for the people that are living and working there, as well as for Crimpy and for the nonprofit. And what Jerome gets out of it over time is a little bit of security and being able to retire, feeling like he can spend more time sailing.
We all, the listeners, know that Jerome has a strong affinity for sailing, so we definitely want to get him on that boat more often.
Right, we haven't even got the boat in the water yet. So,
oh, geez.
So as Jerome mentioned, the educational program and sales of nursery plants and medicinal plant tinctures, those are underway, and we also make income doing design and consulting services and offering compostee services. But there are a whole host of other opportunities, like seed saving or value adding fruit products, making garden related woodworking and other types of crafts, farm to table cuisine, rabbit husbandry or aquaculture, or even viticulture. Or we have a lot of room to expand with digital education. We do a lot of in-person on-site education, but I would love to see our digital education be mm-hmm. vamped up.
So are there specific positions that you have that you're looking to fill or attract the right person for?
Not specific positions, but we do have space for 1 to 2 young farming professionals who are really motivated, already experienced in their craft, and want to live and work in a place where you can be family with the people that you're working with and also build something beautiful and sustainable for yourself and for the land at Crimpy.
And so that, do you think that those are some of your biggest goals of it? Or for you, Jerome, for the kind of pioneer of this program, do you feel that, what are your top 3 goals for creating the livelihood program?
Well, I think that the medicinal herb business could be brought up out mm-hmm. of the doldrums like the nursery was, and also some other plant sales and the compost tea operation. All those are potential money makers or mm-hmm. income makers, and we have the facility there, we have the product there, we have the infrastructure there, the machinery and everything, and we're already doing it on a certain level, so it just needs someone to come in and take it over, and maybe 2 or 3 of these livelihoods and sort of manage them together. Those would be one of our goals, I think, is to do that. And and I think it's moving in the right direction. So I'm real comfortable with where it's at, and we're having a good time and mm-hmm. enjoying the spring. We've dodged all the frost so far.
Fabulous.
And
how about that big snow we had last week?
We had a foot of snow, and nothing got damaged.
Great.
And nothing got frosted. And you were just over yesterday picking nettles.
I was picking the stinging nettle.
Yes.
Never too much for me.
We have the best stinging nettle patch.
You absolutely do. It's an amazing patch. It comes up earlier than most, and just, I mean, it's already beyond knee high, and we've had multiple cuttings, and I made a stinging nettle and lemon sorrel lasagna that I'll bring over to the kids tonight at the Waldorf School.
Oh, great, great, great. And we have new visitors. There have been a couple of mallard wild ducks that have taken up residency in the pond, and I'm still possibly getting some ducks from Casey, but they've just been snooping around my pond for about a month, and now they've pretty much settled in. And it's a real interesting relationship to bring wild animals into your farm and have that nurture that, you know, that camaraderie that we have with the turkeys that have come back and forth around our place all the time. We have it with the deer. And we provided a certain amount of, you know, food for them outside the fence. So they're pretty happy. And, we have a big tom turkey that's protecting our area for when the flock isn't there. He's actually kind of a guard, a security guard, to scare any other turkeys away. So I talk to him every day and, you know, give him a bit of grain from the brewery. And the ducks really like the spent grain from the beer works. They get a big bucket full of it every day. So I guess they're having fun, maybe getting a little high on the spent grain or something. But
a little fermented grain for them.
Yeah, and the swallows are coming in. We have salamanders and dragonflies, and all kinds of songbirds are coming in now. So it's been really, all the fruit trees are flowering, and so it's a really exciting time. It's so green and lush there right now.
Well, and I know from living there myself what a magical place that is and how special it is still to my daughter, and she loves going up there all the time. So if any of our listeners haven't been to Crimpy, you should definitely schedule a tour soon. But Vanessa, from your perspective, how has it been? How long have you lived at Crimpy now? And then how has that been for you so far?
Just over a year, and it's magical. We joke that we like to follow, our celebrities that we follow are all the critters that Jerome just talked about. And it's really special when friends and family, or even just visitors or tour visitors, come to visit, and I get to take them on walks through the forest garden. And every time you walk through, something new is blooming, or there's something new to taste, or there's a new arrival on the scene, a new pollinator, or so I'm just in heaven with the work-life balance I've been able to find, a career that balances all of my intelligences and keeps me working outside and playing with the animals.
And how has the experience been so far in this past year with running the nursery as far as from a business perspective? Is that moving forward in the way that you would hope?
Yeah, it's been really fun to apply the business and advertising and marketing and management skills that I previously applied for a very unrelated job now to something that I'm passionate about. And every experience with a customer is an opportunity to get them excited about edible perennial plants. And I just love the excitement on people's faces when they're walking away with a fruit tree and they know that they're making an investment in their food security and in their natural community.
And what are some of the kind of top plants that you have up there, either from your perspective as they're just being amazingly delicious varieties or top sellers or what have you?
Well, something new this year that I'm excited to start growing is a Saskatoon berry or service berry. And it's a brother of the native service berry that grows around here. But in general, we can grow apple, pear, plum, apricot, mulberry, cherry, currants and gooseberries.
Grapes.
Raspberries, but I do especially get excited about the strawberries.
Who doesn't?
We have some that we just planted in the forest garden. We're trying to get a nice, strong new patch established, but also I planted some seeds. So look for some strawberries at the farmer's market in Basalt. It starts on Sundays, June 18th.
Well, that's not just any strawberry. That we got that strawberry from Larry Beasley in Paonia, who he was digging them up in his yard and giving them away. They're wild strawberries.
Oh, wow.
But I just got two more varieties from Pat over in Silt from Sunshine Farms. So, so we have about five varieties of strawberries and five varieties of raspberries as well as blackberries. And So, and currants and gooseberries and yosterberries and...
I was asking you yesterday when I was there if you guys have started propagating that champagne currant yet. That's the one I'm after. There's only the one in your forest garden that I've ever seen, and it's...
It's a few places there, and I really wish... It's a scraggly-looking bush, but it's one of my favorite currants.
Oh, it's the most delicious thing I've ever tasted. Champagne currant is a perfect name. It's so... And I've never seen it anywhere.
Oh, you're talking about the white ones. Okay.
But not... It's one of the ones that's just almost pinkish. It's just amazing.
Well, next to it is the buffalo currant, which you probably don't remember eating, but it's long and has a harder skin. But that's even a better currant. Really, really sweet.
Yeah, there's so many good varieties.
Yeah, those are European currants. So they were bred for more flavor and bigger, the gooseberries and the currants in Europe and Scandinavia were much bigger. And so they bring those over here and we've been, propagate those. And those are the ones we sell in our nursery.
Great. Well, on that note, we're going to take a little pause. Thank you for listening to Living Permaculture on Public Radio KDNK. We are here in the studio with, of course, Jerome, my co-host, as well as Vanessa, talking about fruit trees and deliciousness and also the livelihood program at the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. So diving back in on the livelihood note, is there anything that you have struggled with so far with developing this program? Any kind of hiccups or learning lessons?
The most challenging part is that you're having to pick your family members. And so,
blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it's sometimes you work just fine with a person, but not well enough that you can adopt them as your new family member. So, attracting the right people and finding a good mix of personalities.
Right. Jerome, would you agree?
Well, that's our challenge, and that's probably why it took two or 3 years or 4 years to find somebody like Vanessa that has, everything sort of fits her goals and what we want to do. So we want to have this institute sort of take on a life of its own, so that it doesn't cease to exist while I'm gone. So I'm going to try to let go of some of the reins as soon as possible, so that the people that are doing the education can take over some of those responsibilities sooner than later. And you're part of the education team, so it's always it's good to bring you into the fold and have you as a partner. Maybe you could say a little bit about your experience at Crimpy, and then you've always had this desire to do the medicinal herb stuff, and you did a lot of that. You started doing that at Crimpy, and before you were doing that at Crimpy. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your venture into native roots? And maybe you said this already on the show, but maybe people didn't hear that. We could talk a little about.
Well, I lived up at Crimpy, as many of our listeners know, for about 3 years or so, doing lots of different jobs, as most people who stay at the Permaculture Institute do. It is definitely a jack-of-all-trades position. A beautiful experience, though, and really grounded me in Colorado's bioregion and understanding how plants grow in this space, because that was the first time I had lived in the West. I had been into herbalism long before then, but really had this amazing opportunity to see so many plants so far into their life. Jerome has multiple different culinary and medicinal herbs, lots of perennial varieties that are growing and almost have naturalized on site. The lovage, the catnip, the comfrey, the hollyhocks, so many. And now just recently, I think last year, there's a variety that's related to hollyhock, looks somewhat similar, a bit less dramatic in its flowering, that we discovered had found its way to the Permaculture Institute, which was marshmallow.
Yeah, right.
Which is an extremely valuable medicinal herb that's used all over the place, and it just kind of appeared there for you. So the beauty and magic of the Permaculture Institute is not only drawing amazing people from all over the world, but sometimes plants just appear because they want to be there, like your ducks. They found a refuge there. And so quite a few years back, I moved off site, but obviously we continue to have a strong relationship and started Dynamic Roots and growing medicinal herbs for that product line. And we do salves and we do botanical oils and fun stuff like that. That's all whole plant medicine. And what we found through the company, which was fascinating, is that as the company grew and it outgrew our ability to supply our own herbs, and we were looking to find local farmers that were growing medicinal herbs in the region, there really aren't any, or many, very, very few, especially to purchase bulk herbs by the pound dried, or even fresh for that matter. And so that kind of spun off into another business that I've embarked upon with Sustainable Settings, which is called Biodynamic Botanicals. And it's strictly to produce bulk medicinal herbs, both for my own company, but wider than that, for state apothecaries and other companies that are looking for the highest quality medicinal herbs that are biodynamically grown and really, really fresh, vibrant, vital medicinals. There's a severe lack in the industry and in the United States as far as medicinal herb production in general. Most of our 80% of our herbs come from China and India and very, very far away. And even if they're grown organically, it just takes a long time. It's a long time in the bag. It's like local food. The longer we get from the farm, the farther it's away, the less vital those plants are. So we've begun expanding the grow here in Colorado and here in the Valley, and also encouraging other farmers to move forward in this field, where we have a great opportunity to not only produce a highly efficacious herb and plant for the medicinal industry, but also to really help farmers pay the bills, because medicinal herbs create a value that a lot of vegetables can't quite meet sometimes.
Yeah, it's kind of like adding a seed-saving component to your farm, the way we've talked about on other shows. It's another income source. It's a more resilient farm if you can start selling certain things that are easy to grow, perennial, and harvesting is generally easier. And if you're just growing, you know, fruits for sale or vegetables for sale, there's a lot more hard work and compost making and stuff, but perennial plants are a lot easier to grow for the most part.
Right. And from a permaculture perspective, a lot of these herbs, permaculturists are planting anyway, because we're needing yarrow and these umbelliferae family plants.
For our pollinators.
Right. For our pollinators, for our beneficial insects. So a lot of permaculture farms, and this is what I noticed in the permaculture field, is that we're planting comfrey, we're planting yarrow, we're planting all of these different medicinals to complete our guilds, but very few farms and growers knew what to do with them or were actually using them either as a cash crop or for their own farmer's health or as plant teas for your garden. Like nettle is a great example of that. Nettle's great for us, but if you're not eating enough, you can brew it into a tea for your plants, and
exactly.
It's really, really full
of vitamins
and minerals.
You can dry it and use it in this wintertime in soups and teas. I just finished all the dried nettles that we had from last year, and I mean, that lasagna wouldn't have been so good if you'd had to import the nettles from China, right?
Oh, it wouldn't have been too fresh. They wouldn't have been the same at all. So,
and another thing that's happened in our old forest garden is that Oregon grape has actually become naturalized there.
Another really valuable
medicinal. So it was there, but it found that opportunity with the understory being really closed in. Like it does in the scrub oak forest, it'll get pretty thick. Sometimes it grows right on the bare rocks. It's an amazing plant, but it's just sort of moved in under all of the old growth canopy of natural fruits and apricots and plums and pears and stuff. So we probably have to, you know, make an announcement about some of our next weekend. Let's see, the 3rd and the 4th, we have a workshop, a forest garden, and a greenhouse one day of each. And then we'll have, do you want to mention some of the other workshops we have coming up?
And then in July, we'll be hosting our Permaculture Academy and then our Permaculture Design course in August. You can visit crmpi.org for more information.
Great. How is there room still available in this next course coming up this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Great. And what are some of the things that you'll be talking about? You have one day of greenhouse and one day of forest garden. So if someone local was thinking about maybe coming to those, what could you offer as far as why they would do that?
Well, and you know, if you want to buy a new car, if people want to plant some edible landscaping, they want to come and kick the tires. They want to see a forest garden that has 200 varieties of fruits and vegetables fruiting and all the different layers, and see what resonates with them. See if that's something they want to do or part of that in their backyard or in their homestead of 5 acres or whatever. We can walk them through our forest garden, do some hands-on. We do some PowerPoints. We do show them some different varieties of strategies for perennial carbon farming. And then we can work with them individually on their own properties, give them some ideas. And that's one day of forest gardening and one day of greenhouses. The same scenario happens with greenhouses.
I've seen so many people come to that greenhouse workshop that are looking to build a greenhouse, and because you have so many different styles, mm-hmm. it's been really beautiful to see.
And then we've also built several, with our company Ecosystem Design, we've got lots of them in our book, The Forest Garden Greenhouse, so we feature about 15 projects that we've done. And I also have Michael up on the second day, and he meet the class and teach a little bit as well. And you come up from time to time to teach herbs as well.
That's certainly great. Do. And there we are, folks. Thanks for listening to the Living Permaculture Show on Public Radio.
927-4158 if you want to get
There's your number. Okay. We'll see you next time.